Hello and welcome to the Footvey English podcast in collaboration with World Football Index, a unique mix of fandom and journalism. Footvey English is your one-stop shop for all things Venezuelan football in the English language, from the men's to the women's and the domestic leagues to the national teams. Today, we are joined by an English head coach who is in charge of the professional football club TPV in Finland. But the reason why we have him on the podcast is because very recently he spent 8 days in Venezuela as part of his continuous professional development as a head coach. Ash, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
So, Ash, I briefly introduced you, but could you tell us a bit more about yourself, your coaching background and your career to date so far?
Yeah, so I've been coaching for 13 years, maybe in 14 years since I was coaching as work since I was 18, but I started learning and doing my level one at 16. So I've been doing this a long time now, and it seems even longer each time I kind of discuss it or reflect back. I've always been interested in travel, so I've visited a lot of countries, and that's really shaped kind of my career or my view on football. I've always wanted to work abroad. That started with working in America, and then the dream of kind of working in Europe. And most recently, I managed to fulfill that working in Iceland, and now for the last, this is my third season now, the last 3 years in Finland.
And you've coached in academies in like England and Africa, you've coached in professional football clubs in Europe. What informs your decisions when you're choosing like your next destination, you're choosing like where you want to coach?
Yeah, it's that's something that we've actually been discussing a little bit this week, me and my girlfriend Alice. It's partly football, partly lifestyle based. When we were traveling around South America in 2019, the main things we wanted to tick off was, well, for me, was being in Europe, and then some location wise, or not even location, geographical, I'd say, is we wanted some to be near water, if that was the sea, a river, a lake, or if not that, near a forest or mountains, something where there's that wildlife, or you can walk and you can go and do things and take a step away from football. That was kind of, they were part of that first thought of where would we like to live. After the experience in Iceland, where we worked or we lived in a very small village, we developed that list a little bit more. So now it's not necessarily living in a city, but living in a slightly more built up area, and with easier transportation to get home or to get away from where we are. And that's, again, improved in our current destination. And what we've been speaking about really the last few days is seems to be an eternal winter at the moment. So the climate is something that we're discussing at the minute, and where we can maybe get less winter than 6 months, maybe looking more towards a 1 or 2 month winter, but that's obviously an ideal world. And then football wise for me, it doesn't come secondary, but more recently, the more and more I think is, if I continue doing what I'm doing at the minute for another 20 years, I'm still going to enjoy it. Ideally, I want to progress as a coach, but it's not the be all and end all. There's everything I spoke about there wasn't really football related.
Yeah, and it picks up an interesting point that maybe a lot of football fans will overlook, that, you know, your next step, a coach's next step, isn't just going to be influenced by perhaps the level of the football or the coaching, the level of responsibility itself. Because I know you've told me previously that although you're currently a head coach, you actually are quite interested in your next step being almost a step down in terms of hierarchy to an assistant coach. And the reason being for that is because you've had the responsibility of a head coach for a few seasons now, and it's something that perhaps you didn't expect at the time or wasn't necessarily the most logical next step for you. And now being an assistant coach, if that's what you do next, will give you the ability to learn off of somebody else and continue your coaching education. So you've been coaching in England previously in a private academy system, international school system. You've had experiences in Africa. You're currently a head coach of a club in Finland, Scandinavia. What led you to want to come out to Venezuela? You've been in South America, like you said, in 2019. We worked out together that Venezuela was the last of the 10 comparable countries for you to visit. So other than the, I guess, satisfaction of ticking off comparable as a section of the world, what drew you to come to Venezuela?
Yeah, I guess it's come from my development with players. Is I see my career or my journey a little bit, I guess you can say, it's like a diet. So you can't just have the same thing over and over and over again. And I try and vary that diet. So like you just said, then I've been a head coach. I'd happily be an assistant coach. I've worked a lot with senior players. I've also worked with 16 to 19 year olds, and I'd never really say no to working in that side, because I think it's important that I keep improving that diet and I keep traveling and seeing different cultures. Why Venezuela? A big part was I'd been meaning to buy and read your book, and I eventually did, and within reading it, it reignited that spark for travel. It reminded me of so many things we saw in South America, and that trip that we took, we really missed out on telling a lot of our stories, because we went straight from South America to Iceland, and then COVID hit. So expected to see friends and family and talk about what happened, like what we did in South America, a lot more. And actually, it didn't really work out that way. And we didn't tell some of those stories. So I think reading that, reading your book, just brought back some memories and made me think, oh, forgot how much I loved South America. And brought that to the forefront of my mind, reached out to you. And I think we're very similar people. As soon as you kind of get an idea, cogs start whirring, and it's like, okay, is that possible? Is that possible? Is that possible? And we just started talking and going from there, really.
So obviously, you'd read the book, so immediately, well, and I think the sentence unintentionally sounds arrogant, but you read the book, so immediately you knew a lot more about Venezuela and Venezuelan football than a lot of people. But also in 2019, I don't necessarily believe in fate, but most things happen for a reason, and you're very thorough in your decision-making process, it seems. So there was obviously a reason you didn't come to Venezuela in 2019, perhaps. So what were your preconceptions or expectations of Venezuela? Because as I well know, but as you reminded me in the week coming to Venezuela, the UK government tells you not to come here for any reason. And it's quite hard to get travel insurance for that same reason. So what are the preconceptions and expectations when somebody from outside of, let's say, outside of South America is going to come to Venezuela?
Yeah, there was two countries that were kind of question marks, Venezuela and Ecuador. And we did go to Ecuador in the end. And obviously there was in that period of that year, there was like a lot of almost revolution in South America. There was a lot of change happening, a lot of people taking to the streets. So we saw, our eyes were wide open while we were there. And I think that helped shape my perception before I came on this trip. But reading your book, I was still very, I'm not saying it was your writing, I was still very on edge and almost expecting what had been spoke about. And like you said, it's somewhere that the UK government doesn't recommend. But as I discussed with Alice, I'm pretty sure every country that we visited, or most of it, the countries we visited at that time, it was the same. So when I actually got there, I said to yourself, and I think I said to Kevin as well, I was almost embarrassed after one day. I was like, oh yeah, it's exactly how I should have imagined it would have been. But I just had that worry and that, again, almost inexperience of I'd forgotten everywhere I'd been only 3, 4 years ago. I'd forgotten what it was really like and had this weird imagination of something that was never going to be true. And nice, like it was nice then that I very quickly just felt comfortable and was like, okay, yeah, I was being perhaps a little bit stupid in having those thoughts or those images in my head. So that was, yeah, that was an interesting process of kind of almost relearning what I knew. There was reasons why we did go to Ecuador, even though that we saw that as a little bit of a risk. And when we were there, again, same thing. It's just everyone going on with life, and the same way as anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and of course, whilst you came to Venezuela and you spent 8 days here, we did talk about whilst we were going up and down the Autopista for probably the millionth time, that it was like a bubbled experience, because being in Caracas itself is a bubbled experience, but also, it was reflective of what the reality would be like if you came here to live as a foreigner. Like it's not wrong to say that obviously foreign people are obviously going to have a different existence to different levels of the social ladder within Venezuela, for example. But in terms of informing the decision of a football player or a football coach as to whether they wanted to come to work in Venezuela, you experience misrepresentation of Venezuela. And through reading the book and through traveling South America previously, you know, you are not blind to those things. And we still, in the time that you were here, saw things that, you know, you wouldn't see in England, for example. You'd see things that, you know, okay, yeah, I'm in South America, or, oh, okay, I'm in Venezuela.
The driving in general, yeah.
the driving in general, but no, also things like, you know, the place on the junction to join the highway near my house, where you get, you know, kids that should be in school offering to clean your windows, or the guy with one leg on crutches pleading for money, or you know, you see things like that as well. But so whilst you were here, what did you do?
Yeah, like you said, it was maybe a little bit bubbled, but it was also a reality that it could be a reality. And that was what I kind of not asked you for, but that was what we worked out would have been the best for the trip. So predominantly I was observing Deportivo La Guaira and Quique, which was fantastic. He was really open with myself and with you. The players really open. From the first day, people were coming up and kind of introducing themselves, shaking hands, asking how we were. And kind of as the week, more and more players and staff did that. And it felt very, like a very family orientated club or family orientated team at the minute, which was awesome. And it was a good experience for me to see that full week of training, see the full process, and then go and watch the game. And as I said to you, when I was sat next to you at the game, it gave me that immersive, I wanted the team to win. I was frustrated that the team were not doing what had potentially been worked on in the week, and things weren't quite going exactly to plan. And that was very frustrating. And it was interesting how quickly I felt a part of that. I'd say that was kind of the main bulk of the trip, and tied in with that, watched or visited Crocodrilos and Caracas's training ground, and was able to watch, again, really, really welcoming there. Was able to watch lots of training there from the under 17s, I think maybe even under 16s, up until the first team. again, it was interesting to compare and see the different types of training, the different levels of players, and styles of coaching there. And then I think we tied in a couple of training sessions where I was able to work one with what I would say is more like a hobby group. We worked at the I did a session with the American school, the under 18s there, and then a select group of players, of pro players that was a brilliant experience for me to coach them. A really talented group, and it was nice to have such a talented group working together. I think we had 11 guys, maybe 12 guys.
Yeah, we had 11 16 to 18 year olds. The majority of which have had youth national team experience at either under 17 or under 20 in modules, or hopefully by the end of the month, tournament call-ups. Yeah. And one female player who's shortly off to study/play on a scholarship in the US. So it was a high level.
Yeah, and that was. It's not often you get such a small group with such a high level. The difference between the top player and the worst player was minimal, and it was great to kind of do that. And then we obviously tied in a little bit of tourism, a bit of seeing what Caracas has to offer.
So before I move on to your observations of what you saw whilst you're here, I just wanted to, as you brought it up, just wanted to pick up on that, the little group of footballers that you took for the training session. We organised it obviously through Andrade Sports Group, the agency. And the next day when Mauricio and I were like talking to you for your feedback about it, I don't think you used the specific Premier League club that you said for a reason, so I won't name them. But you said, like, if you were to compare it to a Premier League academy at under 18s, you say technically the level of the Venezuelans you saw was just as good, if not better, but that they would probably lose a game to a Premier League academy team because of perhaps a lack of game intelligence or the decision making on the pitch. But it was the big thing that I found really insightful was the individual comment that you said, yes, maybe they'd lose the game, but they'd have the better players on the pitch. But for people who outside of Venezuela who, you know, are still trying to come to grips with the level of talent in Venezuela, the level of the league, the level of the youth players, what would you say led you to make that conclusion of the 16 to 18 year old group that you worked with?
Yeah, most of my experience with academy football in the UK has been playing against academy sides with Brookhouse College. So I'm not going to say I'm an expert, but from what I've seen in games against those, but for me individually, the technical ability, as well as what we saw with especially the younger guys. That explosiveness and decisiveness in how they played 1v1 was very high level. Now, I'm not there is players like that in England, and that's what we're in England producing a lot more of. But still, these guys were excellent, and in terms of what the almost stereotype of a South American player, these players are not that. In terms of thinking about a classic number 10 who's just going to solely think about with the ball. They were excellent with the ball. They were explosive with the ball, but then their transition to go and win it back was equally good. Where they might lack would be, like I said, if you were to put them into a team, I think an academy side in England is going to, a top academy side in England is probably going to maybe win the game. But the most exciting players, or the different players, would potentially be these Venezuelan players. And at the end of the day, that is what people want to see, and that is where clubs are gonna want to invest. And it's always what you can do. Like I spoke to the players and said, find out what you're good at, find out your super strengths, and showcase that as much as possible, because that's what you're going to get selected for, either by your coach or that's what a scout's going to see, or that's what a club's going to sign. It's all about that. And there was some really exciting things that we saw there. And I got to watch Tutti, Kevin Andrade, in the flesh up close for a whole week. And he is something special as well. It's easy when the Guardian highlight a player like that to then just watch him as much as you can. But he's got a lot of ability, and these other young players that I worked with had very similar traits. They're not where he is yet, but there's some similar things there.
So in your time here, you saw 3 games live in the flesh, but you saw an entire round of fixtures, thanks to my addiction and obsession with watching every game on TV. Thanks to the scheduling here, no games are on at the same time. You saw 5 different teams live in the flesh. You saw 2 teams train throughout the week. And I know you particularly enjoyed the experience of seeing Deportivo La Guaira go from match day -5 to match day itself. This question is 1 and 3. What were your overriding or takeaways, your main takeaways or observations of, firstly, the league itself, secondly, the coaching that you saw, and thirdly, the players, the either the overall level of the league or the individual level? Because I think Venezuela is perhaps a victim of maybe the level not being understood, but also the overall level of the league not being necessarily reflective of individual players' levels.
Yeah, I think over watching so many games, obviously, got a good understanding of what the league was about and some of the, like...
And to point out, you were watching games for weeks, months in advance before coming.
I'm trying to think of the right word. I don't want to use problem. Some of the challenges is the right word. Some of the challenges of the league is obviously, and it's the same anywhere in the world, you have environment. So that might be weather, that might be pitches. And I think that affects how the game looks. And that is a challenge, because that's how the game has to be played. And that's how they get to be successful in that league. I think it's very difficult to, it would be very difficult to play a rock and roll, super high intensity brand of football, because it's not gonna last. Either a team is gonna blow up within the 90 minutes, or they're gonna blow up within the full fixture list of the season. So that's one thing, and that's one of the variables you always have to take in as a coach. If I wanted to go and coach in Venezuela, there's no way I would do the exact same thing that I've done in Finland in terms of style of play. How that is a challenge is that then it makes how the game looks visually for scouts or for agents or clubs, whoever, recruitment. It maybe makes it look a lesser level of player than it is. But it's just a slower tempo that has to happen due to the climate, but also due to the pitches at the moment, I would say. If you then are watching, like I did, you're watching the games on different surfaces, different sizes of pitch, not just watching football, you're seeing, then you see the full player and you see the full technical arsenal of the player. And that's where I can go and say, okay, they're high level individual players. Maybe the league doesn't look high level in terms of if you're watching it, just from the eye. But when you really look deeply at the individual players, and the teams are fairly well organized. I think we discussed with Kike, it's at the moment, it's a bit of a rut where most teams play very similarly, a very similar style of play, similar formation. But I think the overall philosophy will need to stay the same, because it can maybe be pushed a little bit. I think it can be, but it can't be. You're not going to expect to see what you can see in the Premier League, like that kind of speed, or even in some Scandinavian countries where there's a lot of excellent facilities and it's a completely different climate. So it can just be bam, 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 bam. So that plays a part of it. I've lost my train of thought on the next part.
Well, I think I can pick you up with a follow-up question, which I hadn't planned, yeah. But based on what you said in your answer, from your time here, is there something that you've learned and that you will take away and introduce into your coaching? And similarly, if you were hypothetically to come here and coach in the future, or if you were to stay in contact with Kike and discuss coaching, is there something you think as a coach you could bring to Venezuela that perhaps it's lacking, or perhaps would immediately get a result because it would perhaps be taking advantage of a weakness in Venezuelan football? So two questions: what would you take away from your experience here in terms of coaching, and what do you think you could bring to improve the level of an individual team or the league in general?
Yeah, the biggest takeaway for me was kind of a selfish one, just solely was, okay, I feel like I'm doing the right thing. I'm on the right path. I feel like what I'm doing over an extended period of time will work. So that was a nice affirmation for me. There was loads of little takeaways, and there's things that we've inputted already in training. We had the discussion about it, but before every training session, the players come together and they pray. We've started coming together before every training session now and taking a moment of silence. We're kind of multicultural within our club, so it's multi-faith. I'm not religious per se, so I'm just taking a moment of reflection, and that's something that I brought in, and it's something that I was nice, because it's like, okay, that is a big cultural thing that I've seen and gone, that's something that an English person wouldn't even think about. Wouldn't even ask, what do you normally do before the training session starts? Someone would have to tell me. Now I've seen it, I have it in my mind of, okay, especially in a South American country where most countries are Catholic, it's going to be something that's going to happen. And the fact that I saw it has opened my eyes of, okay, that might be something that I could have stumbled over in the future and maybe looked a bit insensitive or just not understood that moment. And a couple of other little silly things. I think the advantage, and you spoke about it on your recent podcast you did, that I listened to the other day. I think one thing which is not right at all, is just because I'm English, I would get a certain level of respect, and I imagine people would be like, what do you think we should do? Like, I'm the oracle. I'm quite humble. I wouldn't say I know more than anyone else. But I imagine that would have a little bit more leeway on any changes I would want to make, potentially more so than Kike, who I think is already doing very similar things to what I would try and implement. But maybe that would be something that would play. I'm not saying it would. I'm not saying I know more than Kike. I'm not saying that would be correct or would happen. But there's that potential there. But I do think that outside influences on a league, it just brings a different flavor, a slightly different idea. You could be saying the exact same thing, just in a slightly different way, and it just clicks with a player. And that might stick with that player, especially if we're talking about Venezuela, when they move to another country. I think that would be something that I could bring a different lens on things.
And something you mentioned to me prior to coming out here, and then, you know, sort of saw it in front of your eyes in the games that we attended, and you pointed them out as they were happening, but shot efficiency, is that having come here, is this something you'd still hold as an opinion on Venezuelan football? And I know you said you looked at the, not just Venezuela, you looked at the data across South America at league level and then at continental level, i.e. Libertadores or Sudamericana, and there's a slight drop off in it. But you made a point about shot efficiency and perhaps a tendency for South American players to A, enjoy shooting from range to get the odd golazo, but B, the logic behind it, why there is a tendency to this, because it leads to the kind of goals that get you noticed in these kind of leagues.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a, it's not an obsession of mine, but it's something I strongly believe in, and it's a key part of how we play. Is based on based on where most goals are scored, and worldwide, most goals are scored in the 6-yard box. Most 70% of those, I think, are scored off one touch. 70% of goals are scored in the six, in the golden zone. 80% of those are off one touch. 85% are off two touches or less. So you're more likely to score in those areas. And if you look at the data from last season in Liga Footbay, Metro, for save me bodging the full name, Metro were the team that scored the most goals from those zones. But if you look in South America as a whole, a lot of teams will have a lot of shots from outside the area. And maybe that efficiency of finding the ball in that correct zone more often, or knowing when is a good opportunity to shoot from range and when it's maybe a little bit of a hit and hope. I think that can definitely have an impact. And football is quite simple in the fact that if you score goals, it doesn't matter what level. If you're playing step six in England and you're scoring 30 goals in a season, or if you're playing Liga Footbay and you're scoring 30 goals in a season, teams are going to go, wait a minute, this guy scores goals. And if you continue that trend at whatever level, you'll keep progressing until that probably evens out a little bit. But like we discussed, yes, I understand why it might be good to score one of those long range efforts. It gets loads of views on social media. It gets shared around the world sometimes. But for me, for players who want to then go and get a career in Europe or in the MLS, or it's consistency, consistency, consistency. Can you go and score 15 to 20 goals? And you're going to go and score 15 to 20 goals by being in the right area and making the right decisions more often.
For our listeners, having been here for the time you were, and obviously spending the time previously preparing yourself for your time here and watching plenty of Liga Footbay, how would you compare the league to perhaps a European league, or a league that has more profile, that the public understand more? How would you compare and contextualize the league so people could have a better understanding of the football here and the level it has?
It's really hard to compare leagues. I always get asked this about Finland as well, and I find it difficult. It's maybe a cop-out answer, but I'll answer it similarly to how I'd answer here. It obviously varies team on team. It varies in terms of the game, the matchup. But I would say individual players, it's a very high level. I'm saying top one, two tiers in most of Europe. And I don't mean every player. I mean, if we're looking at the top player on the pitch in every game, that could be top one or two tiers. If we look at it as a whole, it's maybe a bit more mixed. And that's due to the factors we've spoken about before. The style of play most teams are trying to play makes it look less attractive. Those players being able to play in that style of play, most teams play quite long ball. And if you're doing that, if you watch that in England, there's some technically excellent players that can play long ball and bring it down and link up play really well. But I would say here, there's a little bit of a... players have the tools to do it, but maybe they don't need to be doing it. They could play a much different style of football, but they're being told to do that. And that has an element of it. I think the biggest thing is, I imagine your listeners are doing it, but make sure they're watching, make sure they're tuning into the games. And I think that's you'll soon see those moments of brilliance. And I think that's what this league's about at the minute, is more and more of those moments of brilliance from individuals, but almost those moments of togetherness from a team, where a team has come and put together a really good performance or a really good strategy. But the consistency in games is going to vary. And that's why it's like seeing those moments in a game, or that whole performance in one game, and then not going, oh yeah, it's going to be exactly the same next week.
And last two questions, Ash. Firstly, did you see any players whilst you were out here that you were excited to follow and monitor in the future?
So Tutti, 100% will be following him. It'll be very interesting to see where he makes that kind of first move. That if that first move doesn't happen, I mean, I'd be very surprised. Paolo, who I was able to work with, who made his debut yesterday with Useve. I think he was one of the standouts in the group that I worked with. And again, already made his professional debut, so he's going to be an interesting one. And that whole group, really, there was 3-4 guys that I was able to work with, but then also watching their own individual training. And it's always interesting to follow that pathway. And sometimes it's 1 year, sometimes it's 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. You see them make that final step. And I think there's definitely a few in there that will do so.
And lastly, what was your favourite aspect of Footvay or your time here in Venezuela?
What was my favourite aspect? That's a good question. There was sounds a bit stupid, but my favourite kind of moments while I was there was just taking the moments, like seeing the macaws flying over, the kind of scenery that you can see, and taking advantage of that, because it very quickly becomes the mundane. Where I lived in Iceland, the view was unbelievable, but you very quickly forgot about that view and didn't see that view. So they were probably my favourites, of being in that new environment, watching football every day, but then also taking in everything that was going on around me. I'd probably say that. There was a few moments where I just was looking around and, yeah, enjoying that, absorbing that.
Excellent. It wasn't too football related, but I like it. The Guacamayas, the macaws. Yeah.
Yeah.
I certainly was more aware of them whilst you were here than, like you say, I've probably now started to take them for granted. But yes, we did see a lot of them, particularly in the afternoon training sessions at Santo Tomas at Deportivo La Guaira's training ground. Ash, it was amazing to have you here in Venezuela. It was an honor to have you here as Andrade Sports Group, but also as somebody I now consider a friend. You lent me a book. Well, I don't know if you lent or you gave me, but you gave me a book, and I read it immediately. Well, I say immediately, as soon as you'd left. And I finished it Friday night, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Not at all football related, but really enjoyed it. And it's gone towards my book target for the year. Hopefully I'll hit it. But thank you so much for firstly coming to Venezuela, and secondly, now sharing your thoughts and feelings about your time here. It will make for a great episode. Thank you.
Thank you for having me over there. And you went honestly above and beyond, and easily one of the best trips I've been on, especially football related, and everyone that helped you kind of create that trip for me. I know there was a lot of help from other people and the clubs to give me the access that I had. So yeah, really appreciate it, and my pleasure. And hopefully we can continue to do good things together.